Hi, today is August 16th, 2015. This is Mobile News Podcast number 127. I'm Todd Ogasawart and my good friend John Westfall, who once again has graced us with his presence now that he's back at his home.
Yes, I am back and better than ever.
So the first thing I wanted to note, it's not really a technical thing, but just kind of observational, is that the past week, there's been a lot of announcements of downsizing by companies that are formerly very high flyers, and the one that's nearest and dearest to John and me as customers, I mean, by that I mean John and I were customers, is HTC, the smartphone company, which I think is downsizing like 15% or something like that.
Yeah, it's a crazy sort of publicly announced downsizing for them. And it's not anything that I think is surprising to any of us as former HTC customers and HTC fans. I mean, I had HTC phones for almost half a decade or longer, if I, you know, totaled it all up between 2005 and 2015. But it's certainly a sign of the changing times in some of those markets, some of those niches where there's just not enough space for a company like HTC.
Yeah, and you know, even the so-called successful companies like Samsung, and Samsung owns most of the, well, I think they own most, a majority, more than 50% of the Android smartphone market. Even they're facing some tough times.
Yeah, but they will just revert to what they do best, which is copying Apple. And I mean, you know, I was reading a blog post earlier this week that literally someone really was railing against Samsung and showing the side-by-side comparisons back, you know, from the last 5 years of just Apple product, Samsung product, Apple product, Samsung product. And, you know, it's working for them. They are keeping a pretty good firm hold on the Android market. They gambled with their money back in 2010 with their advertising blitz, and now 5 years later, people know Galaxy smartphones. They know Android is, from Samsung is what they perceive to be the high end. So yep. Poor HTC, even though they are producing very nice units and very nice software to go with it. You know, I'm not a big fan of third-party UIs on Android, but if I had to choose between Samsung's strange implementations and HTC's, I would probably choose HTC.
Yeah.
But even then, it's not enough to carve it out. I mean, you got to remember, smartphone market is something that someone's going to buy one of these once every year to 2 years, and they're not going to buy multiple. And if you can't get multiple sales out of the same consumer repeatedly, you can't survive. And I think HTC has got that problem where people in the Android space are jumping from Samsung to maybe an LG to maybe an HTC and then maybe back and forth. Samsung's got enough of the Galaxy line that people might jump from Samsung to other Samsung and it won't be a problem.
Yeah, and of course their Windows Phone line isn't going to save their revenue stream, so.
No, they were good sports about Windows Phone. They've been producing devices steadily, but unfortunately it's not going to be feasible, I think, for them to continue producing Windows Phone products in the future.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting to see where they go. I hope they are able to at least stabilize, if not recover. It'd be nice, as Sven and Frank and I were talking about a couple of podcasts ago, it'd be nice if HTC were selected as Microsoft's premier hardware partner to, you know, kind of prop them up.
But do you think that would help or hurt HTC?
Well, in this case, I'm not sure anything would hurt, any income stream would hurt HTC.
I mean, it all depends on what Microsoft could promise. If Microsoft takes the same sort of approach that Google took with the Nexus line, I mean, I don't think HTC made very much money off the Nexus one.
Yeah.
And so I can't see if there is a Windows Nexus, whatever that would be called, a Lumia or a LumiaXus or whatever it would be.
Alexa.
Different brand. I don't think that they would be able to save the ship purely on that. I think what they're going to have to do is just find ways to be very aggressive in their pricing, find ways to make premium smartphone devices without the premium cost. We had a mutual friend posting yesterday in one of our email chains about a low-end provider that he had recently reviewed a device for and talking about how impressed he was with a device that was only £100 that was 100 pounds currency, not 100 pound device.
Yeah.
That could be really heavy to carry around with you.
The Motorola Brick.
Yeah, so Motorola Brick 100. But anyway, he had been talking about how that had really impressed him, and I think that's the way HTC might have to go, is downsize, stop trying to premium everything, and make a very good device at a very reasonable price.
And that's sort of the trend in Android right now, right? I mean, we're seeing a couple of pretty decent-looking Android phones that are unlocked at reasonable prices. I think the Motorola G's been getting some pretty good reviews. The OnePlus 2, I think, is getting some notice. I don't know if it's getting good reviews, but it was recently announced and seems to be getting a lot of good press. So there are a couple of well-known companies producing stuff that people seem to impress with at reasonable, if not low, prices.
You know, and I think about HTC and I think about their size. They could really take some of the very innovative things that we've seen in the Android space from the very small providers and bring them mainstream. So, for example, last year, forget the name of the product. This is because I only saw a couple videos on it. And I thought, wow, that was cool. There was an Android phone that slipped into a tablet shell. I don't know if you would come across this as well.
Yeah, AT&T was selling it.
AT&T sold it, and I don't remember the name of it.
No, something like that.
It had a funny name.
Yeah.
But that sort of thing is a very niche sort of product, but it's a really cool form factor. And if you had a bigger OEM behind that that could do some advertising and do some placement with it, you might be able to get some of those hybrid form factors to take shape, and HTC might find some revenue in that.
Yeah. Yeah, or, you know, they've been trying other kinds of products like cameras and I think tablets, so maybe they'll find something.
I think worst case scenario, I don't see HTC going away as a company. I see HTC going away as a consumer presence.
Mm.
I could see them reverting back to what they were back in the compact iPac era, where they were making iPacs, but they weren't actually branding them HTC. They were branded compact or branded HP.
Right.
So I think that might be where HTC just runs back. I mean, remember, HTC stands for high-tech computers.
Right.
It's not like, you know, anyone who names their company high-tech computers didn't ever think it was going to be a consumer brand.
Right.
that just sounds way too, what do we call this thing? I just call it a high-tech computers. That sounds great. So, you know, I think that's the worst case scenario, but I would love to see HTC stay on as a consumer brand.
Yeah. Now, another truly a consumer brand that is shedding some subsidiaries, really. I don't know if they're shedding their actual main staff, but is Groupon, which I've never used, but at its peak, I know people were talking about it in the office all the time about, you know, things they would buy through it or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think I ever bought a Groupon. I thought I bought a Starbucks card on Groupon once, but I don't think they did it through Groupon. I think they did it through one of the Groupon clones.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I knew a lot of people that were victim of Groupon and that they bought things they didn't really want and ended up having to use.
Yeah, that happened a lot, too.
Yeah, that was the impulse problem with Groupon.
Do you really need 4 dozen donuts? Probably not.
Do you need 4 dozen donuts? Do you really want that massage that even though it's $100 off, you know...
You have to drive 40 miles.
Yeah, you have to drive 40 miles, and, you know, it's a person who probably shouldn't be giving massages at all. I mean, that's sort of oddity. I think Groupon had a very nice bubble there for a while of people doing the equivalent of impulse shopping on the web, you know, the grab it at the checkout line. Groupon was able to grab that for a bit, and, you know, it's time for them to maybe downsize a little bit as well.
Yeah, and the other one that I found interesting was StumbleUpon, which most people now probably can't even remember what it is unless they stumble upon it. But at one point, StumbleUpon was a major tool to get your site noticed by people. I mean, if you if somebody put a link to one of your blog items or website on StumbleUpon, they literally stumbled upon it. It happened to me once, and you would see huge spike all of a sudden. Of course, it disappeared, but you know, it was an interesting way to market. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess people were starting to game it to market themselves rather than to use it the way I expect the originators wanted it. So they're apparently downsizing too.
Yeah, StumbleUpon was a great service I used to love using, except their iPad app was a really big piece of junk.
Yeah.
It never worked right more than a few times, so I stopped using it after that.
And that may be the main problem, right? I mean, now that a lot of web browsing happens on mobile devices, if you don't have a mobile solution,
It was just a programming problem. However they had programmed it, it was very susceptible to getting a lot of temp files and cruft, and it just wouldn't work right after a while.
Yeah.
So if they had just had maybe better programmers, they might not have this problem.
Yeah. Okay, and continuing on this negative note on our back-to-school special.
Hey, yeah. Back-to-school is only really negative for certain students. Everyone else loves back-to-school.
I never loved going back to school. but that's something, you know, the one-time tech darling, drones, which I'm calling the new Google Glass, because like Google Glass, drones in the beginning had a very, very positive and exciting kind of connotation to it. You know, a little affordable, unlike Google Glass. A lot of them were quite affordable, although the hobbyist versions are quite expensive. But, you know, most people could afford to spend $100 or maybe even a little less for a quadcopter or something with a camera on it. And people were using it all kinds of ways. And now it's maybe not vilified, but coming pretty close with, you know, interfering with commercial flights and allegedly interfering with some kinds of firefighting efforts. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but I remember seeing that in San Diego, but I was later told that may not have been the case. It might not have been a drone. It may have been something else.
Interfering with sunbathing.
Yeah.
And other privacy sort of issues. Yeah.
Well, that's the commonality between drones and Google Glass, right? There's a sense of invasion of privacy, even if none is going on.
Yeah. So we'll have to see how this plays out. I've really been on the edge about buying a drone in the last few years because I would love to play with one. But, yeah, I don't know with the
same here,
current
by the way,
climate what I would use it for.
Yeah, I find it fascinating myself, you know, having been a kid and done the whole rocketry thing and all of that, you know, things that fly always fascinated me, but still. Okay, now something I think you are looking forward to. Apple's boot camp now supports Windows 10.
Yeah, that is a good thing. If I decide to install Windows 10, I will definitely take advantage of that if I don't want to go the virtualization route. Mostly because my virtual machines with Windows 10 can't upgrade. They are telling me that the graphics driver is not compatible, and so I don't know if that's necessarily the real reason I can't upgrade it, or if there's other more nefarious reasons behind it.
Yeah.
But it is nice to have that ability to do a Windows 10 installation on Apple hardware if I need to.
Yeah, I think you might like it if you had a functional version, you know, one that, and by functional, I say that in several senses, one that actually works on your Mac, but secondly, you know, until recently, like last update for Windows 10, a lot of us couldn't use the Microsoft Store, so...
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a bunch of updates waiting once Microsoft issued a patch to let Store run again on all of my three Windows 10 devices.
Windows 10 continues to be an interesting thing to watch. My wife was telling me yesterday that she was having a problem with Netflix in Windows 10 that required a Silverlight reinstall.
Oh.
There are a number of little bugs that are still being ironed out.
Yeah, and speaking of Windows 10, and maybe I'll save it for when we have Jack and Frank and Sven on again, but do not try to run Netflix in Microsoft's Edge browser. It is just a horrible experience. Go install Firefox or Chrome on your Windows 10 box and just forget Edge.
Good to know.
Yeah. Okay, and one other thing, just a quick mention. Google is created a holding company called Alphabet, which you can find, and whose website is abc.xyz. truly.
That is a good domain.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, basically Alphabet, the holding company, Alphabet.com, by the way, is owned by BMW, so they couldn't get Alphabet.com. But Alphabet, the holding company, now owns what we think of as Google, the search company, mm-hmm. which includes YouTube and, you know, a lot of other things that most of us associate with Google. And some of the other interests that Google has developed over years, like their life sciences division and Niantic, which is Ingress, the game. Those have all been spun off as subsidiaries of Alphabet, so they're no longer part of Google proper. I just wonder if that's a way for Google to kill these non-profitable side companies you know, without affecting the bottom line of Google for write-offs.
Yeah, isolate them a little bit.
Yeah. So we'll see in a while what exactly they're going to do with it. But it was kind of interesting. And I think I remember reading, if you're a shareholder, you won't see any change. You'll still be, you know, GOOG and whatever the other one is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now...
GL.
Yeah, so now to the main portion. Back to school. Teacher's edition.
Yeah, this is the teacher edition. I think last year we did back to school where we talked about, I know at some point we've talked about things for students and making students' lives easier. But teachers are the ones that tend to have a lot of the administrative workload of teaching. You know, students have to worry about, I always joke that if you assign a paper, a student has to turn in one copy, you have to grade 40.
Yeah. Oh, so, and before I forget. We should point out your creds that you actually do teach.
Yes, I am in my day job. I am an assistant professor of psychology. For those that don't listen to us very often and wonder why I seem to have this one foot in technology and one foot in other random things.
All right.
But yes, I am a psychologist. In fact, as I put in a programming note, I got to be a psychologist for a whole 2 minutes for a radio ad earlier this week. So I made an appearance not in the podcast sense, but in the terrestrial radio sense.
The real radio.
Real radio, the real thing, at a little station in an old converted house that had a 50-foot FM antenna outside. So it was, you know, a major radio operation.
Okay, so sorry for an interruption, Professor Westfall. Let's go back to school tips.
Okay, so these are some things that I have come up with. Some of them that I'm just trying for the first time this year after playing with them over the summer. And other things that I just recommend all the time to people who are interested in this sort of thing. In fact, I told you before the podcast that this is probably going to be my go-to podcast to point out to my colleagues when they say, oh, can you just give me a 15-minute rundown of all the stuff you use? I can now just say, well, go download MobileViews 127 and listen to my 15-minute overview. Of course, all of this is relative to today's date of August 16, 2015, so anyone listening in the future, hopefully these services are all around, but you never quite know with some of this stuff, especially since some of these are targeted toward educators. They have a free tier, and they're hoping at some point to have a premium tier to keep the lights on and keep the bills paid. So right now, some of them are very good deals in that they are free.
Okay, so let's start off with Remind.com.
Okay, Remind.com, which was formerly, I think, Remind 101 was the name of it, and they just went to Remind.com, lets you send text reminders to students for free. So you basically give your students, you go to Remind.com, you sign up for a free account, you say, you set up a little short code that, so if one of mine is, I don't remember, it's like at West something or another. And then you tell students, hey, just text this short code to their five-digit SMS short code number, and they get a little confirmation, and then you can immediately send out text blasts to your students. You can schedule those in advance. So I'm setting that up with all of my classes this semester and also with my advising students so that I just have a quick way to send these things. And students can also chat back to you. So they get a special number that is not your cell phone number that goes through the Remind.com service. They can send you messages. You can reply back one-on-one. So it's a nice little service. For some of us, we're at institutions that are trying to implement this in some way on a university-wide level, but most of them don't have anything useful yet. So if you want to get your students, and I'm going to, my plan is to incentivize my students a little bit to sign up for this. It's optional, but I think I might, you know, periodically announce a pop quiz a couple hours before the pop quiz or something like that to incentivize students to sign up.
A little behavioral economics.
Yeah, a little bit. So that's one service that I came across. Oh,
and is there a limit, like 100 students max on a blast or something like
that? There is, and it's pretty high if I remember right. There's, I think, a limit of 25 classes. So you can set up, obviously, different classes for different classes that you're teaching. And there is, I think, a limit of number of students in each class. But it's a pretty good deal for free. To be able to do this. And students can also sign up through email as well. They don't have to sign up through text message. So it gives you a little email address that you can give the students and they can send a message there and get the blasts through email.
Okay, that's pretty reasonable.
Yep.
Okay, next up.
Second service, zipgrade.com, Z-I-P grade. This is Scantron tests without the Scantron. If you've used Scantron in the past, you know you need a Scantron machine to go through and grade your tests and compile reports and all of that. Students need to buy special Scantron forms. Once you use a form, it is graded and you can't reuse that form. ZipGrade takes all of the scanning and puts it on your phone. So you can download their answer sheets, which are licensed under Creative Commons, so you can edit their answer sheets, and they have a 20, 50, and 100 question template, so you can go through and do what you like there. It supports student ID numbers. It supports different reports that you would expect, the same thing you would get from Scantron. And most importantly, it is only $7 a year.
So is this like a bubble sheet that students fill in, or
yep, one of those kind of things? It's a bubble sheet, and the nice thing about it is you can reuse the bubble sheets. So I'm going to give out to my students in the classes I'm using this, I'm going to give them a 100-question bubble sheet at the beginning of the year, tell them hold on to this each day that we do a quiz. You know, the first quiz might be 1 through 5, the second quiz might be 6 through 10, et cetera. And when you set it up on their website, if you don't say there's an answer for question 1, it assumes question 1 is not part of that quiz. And so it doesn't count it against the student if there's already an answer in question 1.
Now, when the students use it, are they actually penciling or inking in the bubbles, or is this electronic?
Yep, they're using pencil or pen, and they just pass it in, and then you go through a stack of them with your smartphone overhead, and the scanning takes about a half a second, so you can plow through them pretty quick. Yeah, and it's unlike some of the other services that do this that I've found. Unfortunately, there's no way to scan them and send them in for grading. Mm-hmm. But at $7 a year for unlimited scans, it's a pretty good deal.
Okay. Okay, so the next up, I think, is an open source software. Is that right?
Yes, yes. My favorite learning management system on the planet, Moodle, is open source. And if your university or school does not offer a learning management system, or they offer one that you do not particularly like, you might find Moodle to be much more to your liking in that it was actually designed by educators. It's one of the only learning management systems out there that was designed by educators and not by former students or not by techies. That was one of my big complaints for years with the WebCT and Blackboard families, was that as a tech person, I could figure out exactly why they did what they did and also why it was incomprehensible to most educators. Because they just, it was built from the idea of a content management platform. So you had publishing of resources and, you know, editor flow and things like that that just really weren't working for the education ecosystem.
Yeah, it's not a good metaphor.
Yeah, so if you like teaching online and you want your own little corner of the globe, check out Moodle. You do have to have a little bit of technical knowledge to get it set up on a server. There are Moodle hosting services out there that you can use that charge a small amount, but the software is free, and I run it on a little virtual machine that I think I pay about $10 a year for.
And what is it, a LAMP stack, or is it something else?
Yep, it's LAMP. So it's written in PHP. Okay. Backend is MySQL, so it is very easy to set up and deploy.
Okay. By the way, if I remember correctly, it's been since I saw them, when the founders of MySQL were giving a talk at some O'Reilly conference many years ago, I learned two things. One, it's either MySQL, or not MySQL, or more appropriately, MeSQL, because MY is actually one of the founder's daughter's name.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, I might change my pronunciation. For a long time, I was MySQL was how I always pronounced it, but you know, I've grown into bad habits.
Right, and I think you might recall they also have a product called MacDD, and Max is the name of the other founder's son, I believe.
So I'm curious. There's also a spinoff of MySQL Community Edition that's MariaDB, and I wonder if Maria is someone that we should know as well.
I don't know. You know, and again, I haven't seen them speak in many years, well over 10 years. So. I'm really haven't been doing a lot with MySQL years myself either, you know, except as a end user. So not quite in the movie. But anyway, moving on to something I am familiar with, VLC.
Yes, VLC is one of the best free video players that you can get on Mac or PC. They also have an iOS version that was away from the app marketplace for a while, but now it's back. And one of the things that I like about it that I tend to encourage people to see in it is that when you open it up in iTunes, you can drag a file directly into it and then go play that file in the classroom. You don't have to worry about syncing the Apple Podcast app. You don't have to worry about, is this in my iTunes? It's just, it's a very old school sort of way to do it. You hook up your phone to your computer, you open up iTunes, scroll into the file section for your device, you find VLC, you drop a video file in, it's ready to go.
Yeah, also open source, right? If I didn't
mention that earlier. Also open source and free.
Okay, now one is EventZilla next on your list. Any relation to FileZilla or any of the other Zillas out there?
No, it's just, you know, Zilla is a fun suffix to put on things.
Like Mozilla.
Yes, yeah. Mozilla. EventZilla is a website designed to set up for you to create events and sell tickets to your events. One of the interesting things is if you are setting up a free event, the service is free. So for those of us that run orientation sessions or run big events where we want people to kind of sign up and then we want to have a list of attendees that we can check off when they arrive, EventZilla does that very nicely. It lets you customize the event landing page that you send people to, ask custom questions. So in my case, I ask for student ID numbers. And it will email the person who registers a ticket with a QR code. If they bring you that QR code either on their device or in a ticket, you can scan it using EventZilla's app and check them in automatically. So we're going to be running an orientation session for our majors that we do every year, and I'm asking my my students this year, register on there so that I know that you're coming, I know if you were there, and if you weren't there, we can make sure you get the information that you missed and that sort of deal.
Oh, thanks for that, by the way. I was just about to ask you for a use case because I couldn't figure out what a university professor would use it for.
Orientation sessions, psychology research studies I'm planning to use it for. There are a lot of use scenarios that are not just commercial. And plus, we also occasionally do events that are open to the public.
Oh, okay.
So those are usually free of charge. So this would work out well for that as well.
All righty. And next up?
YouCanBook.me, or You Can Book Me. This syncs to a Google Calendar. Students can schedule appointments with you. Plain and simple, it'll either look on your calendar for open times and give slots that you customize and say, I want 25-minute slots starting at this time and ending at this time. Or you can set it up to only look for certain areas of your calendar. So for me, I have chunks of time that are blocked off as office hours. It knows if it's called office hours that it can schedule student appointments during those times for me.
Oh, that's really nice.
So yeah, instead of having to, I know a lot of my colleagues use sign-up forms on their door when it comes time for advising. This eliminates that. You just send a link out to your students or put the link on your door. Or I have a QR code on my door that if students scan, they go to my page and they just pick a time, put in their name and email. It gets added to my calendar directly. If they have to cancel it, they can cancel it online. They can reschedule it. Saves me a lot of email running around or students calling and saying, hey, are you available at this time? And then I have to go look at my door and see if there's a time slot there. And yeah.
Nice. YouCanBook.me.
Yep. YouCanBook.me.
Nice.
Right now works with Google Calendar. Eventually they're going to bring in, I think, iCal. I don't think they have any way to do it with Exchange yet, but
okay, so no Microsoft Calendar stuff yet.
Probably not, but generally if you're just using it for booking certain things, you can block them out in a Google Calendar that you can set up.
And Google Calendar is free anyway, so it's not a barrier.
All right, the second, or the last, not the last, I got plenty more of these things. The next group that I have is actually if you're looking to do classroom response sort of deals. So these used to be called clickers. Where you had little remotes that students would buy or you would pass out, and then you'd ask questions, and they would punch in little buttons. There are many. I always hated doing that with the little clickers because I thought my students all have massive amounts of technology. Why am I doing this through a third thing that they would have to use in addition to their computer and their cell phone?
Right.
So there are three services that I recommend for this. One is Socrative.com. Socrative allows you to sign up for a teacher account and then set up multiple choice quizzes, true-false quizzes, short answer sorts of things, and then just do on-the-fly polling. So you can tell students, hey, go to, I know for my Socrative, I always write on the board, m.socrative.com is the website students go to, and they put in my room number, which is 344-366. You can customize that to anything that's available. And they just punch in whatever they're going to do right on their tablet or their phone or their computer. It runs in any web browser, and it's all through JavaScript. So there's no app they have to download. There are some apps that you can download for it, but they're just dedicated apps that open up the web page.
I see.
So Socrative is a very nice service I've used for about 3 years now for pop quizzes and other miscellaneous things in class. It's really good to give out before class, like a list of five or six questions that you know you're going to hit on during the lecture. So as you're lecturing, you can go, oh, let's see what everyone said, you know, and so you can look up the poll results at that point.
Right.
Another one is Kahoot. Kahoot.it is one of their websites. Get a Kahoot is another website. If you can remember Kahoot.it, you can get to the back end, which is Get a Kahoot, where you sign up. These are little fun interactive games. They're also clicker-type based things, but they allow you to kind of embed video and have competition in your classroom. So Kahoot is a fun one. For maybe an icebreaker or a short review game, that sort of deal.
So it's more many-to-many versus Socrative, which is many-to-one.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And then Clickers is one that I haven't tried yet, but I'm very intrigued by. It's paper clickers. And what that means is you print out a series of papers that have special symbols on them. You give a set to each student, and when they want to answer a question, they hold up the appropriate paper, and you then open up the app on your phone and take a picture of the classroom. And the app picks up the little symbols on the papers and gives you how many people answered this, how many people answered that. It's kind of a cool system for if you don't want your students playing around with their phones or technology, want them to be more present, but you still want to get some of that interaction in a large group. Clickers is fun to check out. And all three of these, Socrative, Kahoot, and Clickers, are all free.
Nice. Very nice.
Last three things I have are just very simple products that you might have thought about, but might not have thought of the educational value of them. The first is Evernote.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
Our good friend Evernote. Yeah. I do all of my lesson planning in Evernote. I store student records in Evernote, so copies of, you know, Socrative quiz results and that sort of deal if I need those later. Student papers that I'm marking up and saving copies of, etc. It just makes it a lot easier to find than having 100 different files all over my hard drive. And it's also really nice when students ask for things. So, for example, all of my handouts live in Evernote.
Hmm.
And if a student says, oh, Dr. Westfall, I don't have that handout from last week, I can tell them, oh, well, give me a minute. And two taps later, their email box has the shared Evernote link for that handout.
Nice.
So it's a nice way of doing that. Another similar thing, one of the things I joke about in my teaching is that I like to give students just enough rope to hang themselves. So if they tell me, oh, I don't have this, I like to be able to immediately go, hey, we can take care of that. Now you have it. Now what's your excuse? So it's kind of a mean thing, but the students that aren't trying to game the system appreciate it.
Sure.
One of the things I really like is Google Cloud Print. This is a service that Google hasn't really made too much about, even though they've had it for 3 or 4 years now. If you have Chrome installed on a machine, you can share out the printers that are associated with that machine through Google Cloud Print. And then all you need is another machine that can access Google Cloud Print, which you can do through the web. And there are a variety of third-party apps that have Google Cloud Print support. So I have one on my iPhone that lets me print to any Google Cloud Print printer that I have. And I also have Chrome running on my Office PC, which has access to all of our network printers, so the department printer. Which means that when that student says to me, oh, I don't have that handout, I can either email it to them or with two taps, I can send it to the department printer and tell them, oh, just go down the hall and grab it from the printer and bring it back.
Mm.
So another nice thing. And also, it looks like you are a freaking magician at meetings when you can do this.
Mm. Now, because am I misremembering, or do some printers have Cloud Print support built in? So you don't even need a Chrome browser open.
Some do. The only problem is that in an educational environment, most of us are in Microsoft Windows networks, where everything is networked through the domain. And if you want to print to the printer, you have to go through your office computer.
Yeah.
The printers are not put out onto any kind of public availability. So that is why it's a nice workaround to be able to print things without having to annoy your IT department.
Yeah. Okay, last up on your list.
TeamViewer. We mentioned it last week. TeamViewer is great when you want to access network resources from home. So you, if you're like me, our university has a number of things that are only available on the internal network. Students I could only get from the internal network, and so I use TeamViewer to hop into my work computer. Also, if I'm traveling and my work computer reboots, I might have to open my work computer so that Google Cloud Print will work properly. So TeamViewer is always nice to have.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to go back a little bit and mention something about Evernote, which and I've been using for many, many years now. Recently, I mentioned this in a podcast, I think, with when Frank McPherson and Sven Johansson were here with me, is that I installed the Evernote applet or whatever it's called, Android Wear version of it, for my Moto 360 phone, and within 12 hours I noticed that about half a dozen of my notes, some very important ones, were truncated to practically nothing. So I tweeted Evernote support and, you know, kind of told them what had happened in 140 characters or less. And they responded fairly quickly. And two things really impressed me. One, they had an answer to my question. I mean, well, not really an answer to what happened, but maybe three things I should mention. One, they said, okay, first of all, if you're a premium customer, you can use the Evernote history function to recover the file from a previous version, which is what I did since I have a premium account. And the second thing is really impressed me. They said, if you're not a premium customer, DM me and we will temporarily activate it for you so you can recover your files, or your notes, which I thought was very, very nice of them. So those are, and the third thing is, you know, instead of poo-pooing my theory that the Evernote wearable app may have been the cause, they said, that may be, keep a surprise. You know, they didn't immediately try to shout me down or anything. So I was impressed with my interaction with Evernote support via Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Evernote is a very nice product. I've been very happy with them. And I tell people all the time who are interested in Evernote, just get the first 100 notes in there and life gets better. Because it takes discipline to get all your stuff in there, to go off the mindset of, okay, I've got my folder structure on my computer and I'm just going to throw random, you know, note.txt files that I might create. Right. But once you start using Evernote, you become very happy with the results.
Yeah, and if you're a smartphone user, download their scannable app so you can scan things in.
Yes.
Yeah, that's super handy. Now, earlier you mentioned you're on the radio. I mean, the real radio.
Yeah, that was a fun thing for this week. That was also in my capacity as my day job, promoting our psychology program at my university. So, like I said, it's always interesting to see how these things that we once took as the only way to communicate are really still around. You can still find radio, but I have much more fun interacting with you, Todd, on this wonderful weekly podcast. Plus, I can talk for more than 2 minutes here.
Yeah.
I had to keep it down to only 2 minutes.
Yeah, two minutes is not much here, is it?
It really isn't. I was talking with another professor who was doing one of these, and he was upset that he had to fill 4 minutes. And I thought, 4 minutes is...
That's like,
geez, that's nothing.
Yeah, that's an intro.
Yeah, it is. It's a bad joke for us. Really, that's how long we take to set up.
And that's right.
You know, some horrible pun that we're going to do or something.
Okay, and you also have an app pick this week. I'm going to look for it. I'm going to look for one for myself while you talk.
All right, I have a fun story with this app pick. The app pick I have is Threes. It's a game for iOS. Okay. They might have an Android version as well. It's a tile sliding game. You know, these were really popular about a year and a half ago. 2048 was one that really people grabbed onto. Threes was a little bit more complex than 2048. I picked it up a year or two ago. It was a Starbucks free app that I had grabbed, and I played it for a bit. I didn't really think too much of it until about 2 weeks ago when I was back visiting family, when I was on my podcast hiatus, and my father-in-law was talking about how much he loved it, and he started playing it and showing it off to people who hadn't seen it, and I'd seen it before, but it was fun to watch him play. And he had a very calm demeanor as he was demoing it. This was the funny part. He was speaking in him kind of a monotone voice, and as he's going, okay, I slid this, and then see how this happened. Well, he made a rash move, and he goes, well, I got a little excited there. It really was a funny moment because it sounded like the opposite of getting too excited. But it is true with threes. You can get very excited about combining something and realize that you've just made a mistake. But it's a fun little game. It's inexpensive. I think even though it's a paid app, it's only 99 cents or something like that, maybe $1.99. But if you're looking for something to get to pass the time when you're waiting on things or just to enjoy for a new game, check it out.
Okay, and you know, I haven't downloaded any new apps, so I do not have an app pick, but thanks, John. See, I would mention, maybe I'll talk about it next time. I did pick up, you know, for years now, and I know you've got a couple, but I've been looking for a comfortable, lightweight Bluetooth headset. Mm-hmm. You know, stereo headset to listen to podcasts and music and that sort of thing. And I finally found one on Amazon for under $25, so I'll probably talk about that next time. If A, I have a chance to really play with it, or B, my daughter doesn't take it to college with her, because I told her, I got it in the mail from Amazon, and my daughter's heading back to college this week. I said, hey, if you want this, just grab it, and I'll go buy myself another one. But she hasn't grabbed it yet, so I need to keep it.
I will be curious to hear about it, because I've got a one right in front of me that is an under $25 one.
Oh, okay.
So I'm curious if we have the same one.
All right, so that is the end of our Back to School Teachers Edition, Mobius Podcast number 27. And for John's reference, I think you started talking about the Back to School stuff around minute 16 or so.
Ah, well, then I will force all of my colleagues to listen to the first 15 minutes of tech stuff that they don't know too much about just to get to minute 16.
All righty, so that is it for this podcast, and we will talk to you next time. Perhaps with some guests. We'll see.